tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 27th of May 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today's news articles really sort of come under the heading of, well, if you think it's bad here, at least you're not in France. And the first one comes from Breitbart, and the headline is New France, one in three people, either foreign-born or descendant of immigrants. So in Britain, we're about 75% white, 25% non-white. In France, they're down to 35% non-white, only 65% white. And look at all the problems that France has. A major study from France's Premier Public Research Institute found a society profoundly marked by long-term immigration, with around a third of the population estimated to have been born abroad or to have been the child or grandchild of immigrants. Profoundly marked. Would you want to be profoundly marked by anything? I mean, that's not a very positive term, is it? And yet that is the term, it's in quote marks, which France's Premier Public Research Institute was using. Research from the National Institute of Demographic Studies in Paris has perhaps provided the clearest picture of France's demographic makeup, a country officially governed by a colourblind doctrine that prohibits the collection of racial or ethnic statistics in its census, making systematic tracking of immigrant groups difficult. I guess that's one way to get around this and deceive your population, is to just refuse to collect statistics on how many non-white people there are actually in the country. I mean, how can people doubt that this is being deliberately done when the state makes deliberate choices not to collect the data, which shows how fast the white French people are being replaced? According to the findings, which were based on interviews with 27,000 people in mainland France between 2019 and 2020, one in three people in the country are either migrants themselves or the descendants of migrants. So they've managed to get around this problem with the census, I guess by interviewing people and asking them and trying to get people from various different demographics in society, and then multiplying them, I guess, by the number of people in the population. And that's how they get to this figure, that a third of the people in France are the descendants of migrants. The INED study found that 13% were foreign-born. That means 13% have come here or come to France within their lifetime, while 11% were the children of immigrants and 10% were the grandchildren of immigrants. So it's over a third of them have just arrived recently, basically, is what that is saying. The authors of the study said that the impact of immigration in France is like a kaleidoscope whose complexity is continuously expanding. The research found that 41% of the population has some tie to immigration, whether through personal heritage, marriage, or the marriage of their children. And I think it was President Sarkozy, when he was in office, that was saying that the cure for racism was to race mix, effectively. And he said the best way to get rid of racism is to race mix. Effectively saying the best way to get rid of racism is to get rid of white people, isn't it, really, when you say something like that? Because the offspring are, of course, no longer going to be white. And it's saying here that 41% of the population now have some tie to immigration. And also that the impact of immigration is continuously expanding. And just look at the terror attacks that France has. I think it's the number one country for Islamic terror attacks. Much of this has been imposed on the country without consent, with the report finding that among immigrants who came to France after the age of 16, around one in five had either entered illegally or were otherwise undocumented at some point after arriving. So they've effectively broken into the country. A fifth of them have invaded the country. Immigration to France is also overwhelmingly non-European. The INED study found that the largest cohort of immigrants aged 18 to 59, at 32%, came from the North African Maghreb region, much of which was previously under French colonial rule. So I guess they could say, well, we've been taught to speak French, that's why we've gone to France. But they'll still be claiming that they're being persecuted in their homelands when they get there. When you see the number that they actually have there in France, you can understand why they really couldn't care less if they leave France and head for Britain. I mean, why would they want to stop that? It's ridiculous that we send them loads of money to supposedly stop these migrants from leaving France and coming to Britain. I mean, that's something that they're most going to want, isn't it? That they're going to leave France and head somewhere else. You know, it's not going to be... it's not going to be cost effective, is it, to take Britain's money and then stop them from going to Britain when you know that they're just going to be a drain on the economy when they're in France. Meanwhile, 20% of immigrants hailed from sub-Saharan Africa and 16% from Asia. Just 28% came from other European nations. So that's 36% are non-white. So about 60% of the migrants that go there are non-white, they're from nowhere near Europe, they're effectively from the other side of the world, basically. And this has had significant impacts on the country's cultural cohesion, with non-European populations, including those born in the country, finding it much more difficult to integrate. Well, of course they'll find it difficult to integrate, because they're living in a country that was not built by their own ethnic group. It was built by another ethnic group, for another ethnic group. It's not, I would say it's not even going to be possible for you to integrate entirely. If you look at, say, for instance, Jews. Jews have been in European countries probably one of the longest ethnic groups that have been in European countries. And, I mean, some European countries, they've been there for over 1,000 years. And they still haven't integrated, have they? There's still a separate, unique group all of their own. So just taking that as an example, it shows that none of these groups are going to integrate, really, are they? We shouldn't expect them to integrate. I mean, it's not possible. The authors of the study found that only the descendants of European immigrants follow the expected assimilationist model, distancing themselves from the origins of their parents and benefiting from a form of invisibility in French society. So that's effectively saying that white people can assimilate in white countries, non-whites cannot assimilate in white countries, which I would say is extremely obvious, but our establishment like to pretend that these people can integrate, and it's just a simple problem of them not integrating properly. And another argument against this is the fact that these jihadis, these Islamic extremists that we get, they're often second generation. The parents moved into these white countries and they wore European-style suits and they tried to fit in. And then when you get to the second and the third generation, they become more like the countries that their parents actually came from. And they start wearing Afghan traditional clothing, Pakistan traditional clothing, and they start becoming Islamic extremists. I mean, we've got such a problem with Islamic extremists that countries like Saudi Arabia advise Muslims not to come to Britain because they might become radicalized at the British universities. So that shows you that these second and third generation immigrants, far from becoming more assimilated, they become less assimilated and they become more radicalized in their ethnic group, effectively. So the opposite of assimilation happens. Of course, the more that just fractures a society, doesn't it? The more fractured a society is, the less conducive it's going to be to happy living, I guess. In contrast, the study found those of non-European origin were more likely to see themselves as having a hyphenated identity in which they differed from the rest of the country because of their ethnicity or religion. So they might say that they're a Swedish man in France, but they get on with France, a Swedish Frenchman, say, or a German Frenchman. So they still retain an aspect of their white ethnicity, but because they're actually in a white country, it's much more easy for them to fit in with another white nation, because all white nations are similar in certain ways. Western civilization is similar in certain ways, and there are other sort of unique differences that they have. But effectively, Europeans can get on in other European countries because they are European, because they're part of this wider ethnic group. The analysis calls into question a simplistic assimilationist vision, which would suggest that relationships with origins become diluted over generations. The results reveal a dynamic of hybridization and the emergence of ethnicized and racialized identities, the study found. And I would say that's what that's what would be expected, really. If you look at America, for instance, all the people that went over to America were Europeans. They were from European countries. They weren't really aware of black people. They didn't have black people in their countries. When they went to America, there was this other race there. There was this race of black men, basically, that were in America. And because of that, the Europeans then began to see themselves as white, as in different from black. So they became racialized simply because of the fact that there was another race in that country. If you have two different races in a territory, you're going to become aware of race where you may not have been aware of that before. And it made these European nations blend together as Americans, because they realized that even though they might have come from different countries, might have been German, might have been French, might have been English, the fact is that they were all European. They were all part of the same group when juxtaposed with this other group that was entirely different, the black group. I say this is what resulted in the Constitution and saying that all men are created equal and all that sort of thing. I mean, that can only be the case if you are talking about white people or black people. You can't say white people are equal to black people, because they're not. They're different. But if they're juxtaposed to one another, you can say, well, all white men are equal to other white men in a certain way, and all black men are equal to all other black men in a certain way. But you're only going to realize that when you're juxtaposed with this other group, when you actually have two races there. If you just had the white race, basically, in Europe, and they weren't aware of black people, they wouldn't see themselves as all being white. They would see themselves as being German or being French or being English, and these different ethnicities. And what this report is saying, that far from ethnicity being dropped and these people become part of France, so they see themselves as French, they're saying that this actually becomes more reinforced. The ethnic and the racial identity is more reinforced than it was before. This backs up other polling, which has found that younger Muslims in France, for example, are significantly more radical than previous generations of Muslims in the country, with 6 in 10 Muslims aged 18 to 25 preferring Sharia law over French law, and 4 in 10 backing a radical Islamist group like the Muslim Brotherhood. It's this Muslim Brotherhood influence, apparently, over British universities. That's why the Saudi Arabia advises Muslims against coming to Britain or going to university in Britain, because we have this Muslim Brotherhood there. So they're effectively saying that Muslims in Europe are more radical than the Muslims in the Middle East. So why would that be if they're going to assimilate when they come to Europe? But it's the opposite of assimilation that happens. And it goes both ways. I mean, white people are becoming more aware of the fact that they have this shared identity of being white, this shared identity of being European. I mean, this is why you have this generation identitaire over on the continent. People becoming more aware of their race and their ethnicity when they are confronted by people from other races and ethnicities. It makes you more likely to identify with your own group, or at least it seems to do so in a number of people. This is why you had this rise in nationalism again happening. You know, decades after the rise in nationalism that took place around the time of the Second World War, we have this rise in nationalism again now because of all the multiculturalism that we're being forced to endure. The Institut Français d'Opinion Publique, which has tracked Muslim opinion in France over the past three decades, said that the poll had exceeded the most pessimistic estimates about integration. So they said it's far worse than people, the naysayers, could have even imagined. It's actually far worse than that. Nevertheless, the rapid demographic changes in France have been hailed by those on the far left, including presidential candidate Jean-Luc Mélenchon, a Moroccan-born Sicilian Spaniard who has begun to openly embrace the term Great Replacement and hail the coming of a new France. That's interesting, isn't it? Because they kept saying the Great Replacement was a conspiracy theory. Well, quite clearly, it's not a conspiracy theory. They're deliberately replacing the white babies, which are not being born, with adult black people, aren't they? I mean, that's the replacement that's going on. It's called replacement migration. The UN put out a report on it called Replacement Migration about 10 years ago. And yet, if you're on the right and you refer to this replacement migration as the Great Replacement, you'll be told that's a conspiracy theory. And now, in France, they're being told it's a wonderful thing, this Great Replacement. It's going to create a new France. Well, as I said, we have some other news from France now, and this is particularly from Belgium, and this is really shocking. I'm sure many of our listeners remember the Bataclan terrorist attack. 130 people were killed and injured and tortured. They did horrific things. They cut body parts off them while they were still alive. How horrific it was that was actually hidden from the public for a couple of years because it was so bad what they actually did in the Bataclan terror attack. And I just discovered this news article today. Bataclan terrorist already granted penitentiary leave in Belgium. So one of the Bataclan attackers has been released from prison. Mohamed Bakali, convicted in France as a central figure in the logistics of the November 13, 2015 Paris attack that killed 130 people and injured hundreds more. I think they really should say they killed 130 people and tortured hundreds more, has been granted multiple temporary prison leaves by a Belgian court. The Brussels Tribunal d'Application de Peine approved six penitentiary leaves of up to 36 hours each for the 39-year-old Moroccan-Belgian national, who is serving his sentence in Itter prison, a high-security facility in Walloon, Brabant. He has already benefited from several short permissions since July 2025. Bakali was sentenced in France to 30 years in prison for his role in the Paris attacks. The verdict was handed down in June 2022, so only 4 years ago, at the conclusion of the so-called V13 trial, the longest criminal proceedings in modern French history, which involved 20 defendants over almost 10 months. Prior to this, he received 25 years for his role in the foiled Thalys train attack in August 2015, when a heavily armed gunman boarding the high-speed service from Amsterdam to Paris was overpowered by passengers. He rented safe houses in Belgium for the terror cell and provided logistical support. The same network was later behind the March 22nd, 2016 Brussels bombings at Zaventem Airport and Malbeek metro station, which killed 32 people and wounded more than 300. The French authorities decided to merge his sentences to the maximum of 30 years, Belgian news agency Belga reported. So you've got 30 years, so you would think he was going to be in prison until 2055, wouldn't you? But no. Following an agreement at the time of his extradition, so remember he was extradited from Belgium to France. I think they found him in one of the Muslim areas there, and he'd just been living there quite openly. None of the Muslims had turned him in. Agreed at the time of his extradition, he is serving his sentence in Belgium rather than France. Under Belgian prison rules, convicts can qualify for temporary leaves and conditional release after serving only one-third of their sentence. That is a much more lenient regime than in France, where a two-thirds safety period would have kept him behind bars for longer. And in Britain, it's two-thirds. If you're a terrorist, you now have to do two-thirds of your sentence before you can have a conditional release. So they're saying here in Belgium, it's only a third. And I guess if he was remanded in 2015, it's now 2025, he's done a third of his sentence. So they're going to let this guy out, basically, who is responsible for the murder of hundreds of people and the torture of hundreds of people. And he's going to be let out of prison. Does this have anything to do with the fact that so many Muslims now live in Belgium? It does have a lot to do with the fact that he wasn't caught for quite some time because he was just living in the Muslim quarter in Belgium. He really hadn't moved very far from France at all. And none of them turned him in. News outlet La Capitale reported he already was granted five periods of day release since July 2025. This year, he applied for prison leave. On May 11th, 2026, the Sentence Enforcement Court approved the application, despite a negative recommendation from the Public Prosecution Service allowing Bakaly to apply. The same court said Bakaly had taken sufficient steps to find work and accommodation and had behaved calmly and respectfully in prison. So it's got nothing there at all about him turning his back on terrorism or turning his back on Islamic terrorism. Nothing on there at all. But it just says that he's found somewhere to live and he's found some work. So obviously some Muslims, other Muslims, have said, we'll give you accommodation and we'll find you a job. And so now they're going to let him out from prison, even though he's responsible for these horrific, absolutely horrific crimes against the French people. He has already met with some of his victims, which according to them indicates his desire to rebuild his ties with society. Well, I'm sure he'll do anything to, in order to get out of prison, won't he? The Sentence Enforcement Court reportedly sees no reason to fear that he would harass the victims. Well, just the fact that he's out of prison, I think the victims are going to feel harassed by that, aren't they? Just by the fact that he's out of prison, the ones that are still alive, that are missing body parts. His theoretical release date remains 2040, but he became eligible for conditional release as early as February 2024. In a reaction to Brussels Signal, NVA MP Sophie De Witt said it was difficult to comprehend that Bakaly is set to be granted prison leave as early as 2026, despite a negative recommendation from the Public Prosecutor's Office. As I say, I wonder if the fact that Belgium has so many Muslims in its country might be one of the reasons why the public prosecutor is being ignored. NVA is the senior partner in the federal coalition led by Prime Minister Bart De Wever. Cases of this calibre are not about the standard enforcement of sentences, but about a very concrete assessment of the risk to society. When the public prosecutor's office itself issues a negative recommendation, serious alarm bells should certainly be ringing. At the same time, the figures show that this is not merely a theoretical debate. In 2025, 434 prisoners failed to return from prison leave on time. This underscores the fact that any decision regarding such leave poses a real security risk and must therefore be taken with the utmost caution. So, I mean, he might just abscond as well as soon as they let him out. Furthermore, the Belgian government wishes to tighten the conditions for prison leave and temporary release permits, and to monitor more strictly the granting and eligibility for these forms of sentence enforcement. This must be handled with particular care, especially in cases involving serious terrorism. De Witt said her party had serious questions about the decision. In terrorism cases, the bar must be set very high, and any doubt must be resolved in favour of the victims and public safety rather than in favour of the detainee. Furthermore, the question arises as to what extent the victims in this case were actually informed and involved in the proceedings. I can't see them being involved at all if they were going to allow this to happen. In such serious terrorism cases, this is not a mere detail but an essential element of trust in the justice system. Vlaams Belang MP Alexander Van Hook from the opposition in the Belgian Federal Parliament said that it was completely incomprehensible and outrageous, especially given the negative advice from the Brussels Public Prosecution's Office. This concerns a terrorist and a mass murderer. If the justice system cannot manage to punish someone like this in the harshest possible way and permanently remove him from our society, what trust can we still have in justice and the government? Who is going to explain this to the victims? The fact that this is even possible is a gap in the legislation that must be closed. On the evening of November 13th, 2015, terrorists from the Islamic State carried out a series of coordinated attacks across Paris. In just over 3 hours, they killed 130 people and wounded more than 400, many of them critically. As I say, they tortured these people as well. They cut body parts from them, genitalia, eyeballs, things like that. And that was actually kept from the public for 2 years until that information was made available. The deadliest assault occurred at the Bataclan Concert Hall, where three gunmen burst in during a rock concert by Eagles of Death Metal and massacred 90 people. They fired Kalashnikov rifles into the trapped crowd at close range for over 2 hours, executing victims one by one and throwing grenades. Survivors described scenes of extreme cruelty. Simultaneously, suicide bombers struck outside the Stade de France during a football match attended by 80,000 people, including then-President François Hollande, while other attackers carried out drive-by shootings on crowded restaurant and café terraces in the 10th and 11th arrondissements. It remains the deadliest terrorist attack in France since the Second World War. And just think, and the person that carried that out is now going to be released after doing just a third of his sentence, because it was arranged that he would serve his sentence in Belgium rather than in France. If he was in France, he'd still be in there for another 10 years. And he should be in there for life, or he should have given his life. He should have been executed for it. If he carried something like that out in the Middle East, he would have been executed for it publicly. Yet, because this is Europe, he's just going to be let out. And of course, the fear is that he could just disappear and go back out to the Middle East, where he'd probably be treated like a king by his other jihadi supporters. Of course, I'm not saying all Muslims are jihadis, but there are a certain portion of them that are, which are obviously going to look out for him. And also, Muslims look after other Muslims, regardless of what they've done. As we learnt here on this news report, he's already found work, he's already found accommodation, which will be from the Muslim community, because they look after people from their community, regardless of what they've done. It's something that is quite commendable, really, about the Muslim community, and it's something that Europeans do not do enough of. We do not have a specific charity, for instance, for other Europeans that every European is expected to give to. Muslims give a certain amount of their wages every week to a charity which is to help other Muslims. Of course, if we were to try and set up such a charity, we'd be accused of being racist, and we'd be told that we had to give our charitable funding to all the other ethnic groups and racial groups. Otherwise, we would be taken to court for being racist, but it's quite fine for Muslims to do it. And of course, I'm not criticising Muslims for doing that. I'm just saying that Europeans should do the same. Anyway, absolutely scandalous that this man is going to be released from prison. And also scandalous that a third of all the European white French people have now been replaced by people from Africa and Asia. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.